Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 9th of May. I'm Joe Donahue, and it's a pleasure to have you joining us on this fine morning. We welcome you to join us at roundtable at WAMC.org. Any questions that you have, any comments you'd like to make on the stories that we talk about, we welcome. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining me for the panel this morning, we welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Yo.
We also welcome WAMC newsman Ray Graff.
Yo.
And political activist Libby Post helping us out this morning. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
Well, thank you
for not saying yo.
Thank you for not saying yo.
Go along with the shtick.
Yo.
If we had a cello player, the cello player could go yo.
Ma,
right. Excellent. Good morning, and let us get to the stories for the day. There's a lot going on. I guess we'll start in the Ukraine, of course, because that is the top story that's dominating headlines across the world. Two key stories here, one being that separatists defy Kiev and Putin on referendum and have decided to go ahead with the vote. The other story is that Vladimir Putin has arrived in Crimea in his first visit since annexation. So these two stories topping the world headlines this morning, both related, obviously. And we heard about this just moments ago in our BBC newscast. But putting his personal seal on the annexation of Crimea, Vladimir Putin of Russia arrived in the naval port on Friday, where he used the anniversary of the victory over Nazi Germany to assert that Moscow had the right to take over the Black Sea Peninsula. And given that we were talking yesterday about some possible retreat or at least a pause button, how do you think this is looking today, Alan?
Well, first of all, I think, even the most hawkish of folks believe that the Russians, then called the Soviet Union, did probably more to win the Second World War than anyone. I mean, we don't teach it in our American schools, but we're talking about millions and millions and millions of young men and people, in that country. I think Putin's got a big problem right now. He lit the fire, he lit the fuse, and he doesn't know what to do about it. At least that's the way it would appear. He says, we're pulling our troops back. We're not going to give these guys who are trying to take over. The polls are showing that most people want Ukraine to remain Ukraine, there is what we could only suspect is a faux election slated for Sunday, which they won't call off. The fact that people are not willing to participate, who are in the majority according to the polls, shows that it's probably a rigged effort. And Putin now has the tiger by the tail. He doesn't know what to do about it.
And we were so worried about, and continue to be, I believe, about military action and more violence and bloodshed. And I don't, nothing over the last couple of days sort of gives you peace that isn't going to happen.
Well, if the tiger can't be controlled, to further the analogy, and the tiger turns, then you've got civil war. I don't think there's any question about it. And you don't have to have a majority to win a civil war. You can just have a bunch of thugs who are very aggressive and who, act in a fashion which most people won't. And too often, those folks prevail. So it's a very dangerous situation, and you could have what amounts to a civil war there. Then the question is, does the United States come in? To what degree do we start to arm one side? We've seen it before, and it's a very dangerous situation.
Libby?
Well, there's a part of me that thinks if they do this vote and it's not a valid vote, it gives Putin carte blanche to step in. If they don't do the vote and then they do the presidential election and he doesn't like the results, it gives him carte blanche to step in. I think, yes, he's got the tiger by the tail, and the tiger might not be behaving the way he wanted to, but ultimately I think he's going to win, because they could start a civil war, but he has much more military might. But I want to go back to the thing about, oh, this is when we won the World War II, and so I have a right to be in Crimea. I really am a little confused about how we can connect those dots. Anybody have any way to help me with that?
What do you mean, anybody? You mean me?
You, Joe, Ray.
No, I look, the Soviet Union probably did more, made more of a contribution to the Second World War than anybody else. And if they're celebrating the great victory, I think they have a right to do it. Crimea was part of the Soviet Union, of course, and only when Khrushchev became premier did it get given away to Khrushchev's birthplace, as we have discussed many times. A good deal of stuff was done there. So I don't have any problem with this being in Crimea. And by the way, as far as I'm concerned, the Crimea thing is a fait accompli. He's never given that up again.
No, I understand that. I think that yes, he has a right to be there. But are we connecting the dots that because they won and they did so well and they sacrificed so much during World War II, that he had the right to annex Crimea in the last few months? Is that part of the equation?
To which I would respond, right, Schmeit. He's got it now.
Yes.
They can make as good an argument as we can about why we had to annex Mexico, and fight that war in our manifest destiny, which was clearly our thing, or the terrible, terrible plight of wiping out the Indians. There's a lot to be said about all countries which have done this kind of thing.
And it comes down to possession is 9/10 of the law. So
I think in this case it is. Yeah. I think it is. I think if he does more, I think whatever is stopping him from the rest of eastern Ukraine, and that's something we just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We can suspect there's something going on. He has decided that is something he's not going to do right now. At least that's the way it looks, because the guy's a well-known liar, and he can turn on a dime. So we really don't know.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We are going to take a pause and go to a break. When we come back, we will continue with other issues of the day. And again, we welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York, presenting Ginkgo, the Tree That Time Forgot, with botanist Sir Peter Crane, May 23rd at 7 p.m., careyinstitute.org. Temple Emmanuel, Kingston, open house for the religious school, offering classes in Hebrew, Jewish culture, history, art, and music for pre-K through 8th grade, Saturday, May 17th, from 11 to 12:30, templeemmanuelkingston.org. And Rhinebeck Artist Shops, Rhinebeck and New Paltz, providing professional picture framing, fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public, the Atwater Art Gallery upstairs in Rhinebeck, rhinebeckart.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. The House voted Thursday afternoon to form a 12-member committee to investigate the Obama administration's handling of the 2012 attacks in Benghazi, Libya, that killed four Americans. In a vote which fell largely among party lines, with Republicans overwhelmingly in support, the House agreed to form the Select Committee, which will be chaired by Representative Trey Gowdy of South Carolina. Several Democrats voted in favor of forming the panel as well. Top House Democrats who accused the GOP of reviving their outrage about the attacks in an effort to mobilize their voter base before the fall midterm elections had urged their members to vote against that measure. And it is unclear what Democrats will participate. And Speaker John Boehner is expected to name the other Republican members of the committee on Friday. That would be today. So we touched on this a little bit yesterday, but obviously we're moving forward. And I don't know. It seems what more, I guess, the question is that this has been investigated on several cases several times in the past. What do you see in this investigation, Alan, that was not investigated before?
Well, Joe, it's clearly a political hatchet job. That's what it is. And look, they think that Hillary is going to be the candidate, and Benghazi and Hillary are the only thing that they can tie together. So it's part of their electoral strategy. I'm fascinated by the six Democrats, or six or seven Democrats who went the other way, who voted for the panel. The reason for that, by the way, is ultimately to maintain the seats that the Democrats have. It's an old politics trick. You let some Democrats off the hook, and that's in quotes, off the hook, as opposed to in the tank, because you don't want them to lose those seats. You don't want them to lose the seats far more than you care whether or not you allowed them to go their own way, you know, on this. These are what we call usually blue dog Democrats. But there is an argument to be made for having Democratic participation. And the reason for that is that when an outrageous claim is made, you can have somebody jump up from the seat and say, Mr. Chairman or Ms. Chairman or whatever, this is a terrible thing that you're doing here. And the American people aren't going to stand for it. And we know what you're up to. It's just cheap electoral politics. And by that, by having a Democrat to do that, you have somebody, as opposed to no Democrat sitting in the panel, raising that, especially if these are televised.
And again, do you have any sense? Because I don't. In reading what I've read about it, and looking at, there's obviously many more opinion columns on this than there is actual news coverage. But what is the basis? What are they looking at? What is there one specific thing that they are trying to find out here, or is it just to once again bring up an issue that they feel the president is vulnerable?
I don't know that they feel that the president is, they think, is vulnerable.
Well, the Democratic Party.
But he's not who they're worried about. They're worried about Hillary. Hillary is so far ahead in all the polls against everybody. The way I see this is Hillary is going to be the next president if she decides she wants to run and not take this garbage. And if she'll be the next president. So they're looking for things that they can tie, you know, Hillary to. And Benghazi is one of the things that they think they might be able to do. Somebody even raised Whitewater the other day. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing their best. They're doing their best to do that. And the real thing that they risk, I'm sorry, Joe, the real thing that they risk here is looking like fools, is looking like they are, you know, is that they are really not playing fair. I'm sorry, the only way, if Hillary doesn't run, by the way, if they can get Hillary not to run, and Jeb Bush does run, then the Republicans could win the presidency. And then it's possible they would have the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the presidency. But I have a feeling that Jeb waits to find out what Hillary is going to do.
Do you think that this might be somewhat more to do with the midterm elections coming up for Congress?
Yes. I mean, I don't think there's any question that figures into their plan. Off elections for a president are always wicked, and we know that. You can't run on nothing, and so you come up with whatever you can. Now the question is that fair? I mean, does the American people think it's fair if you go too far?
Is anything fair in politics? I mean, you've been around a long time. I mean, you've seen a lot of stuff. You know, there are a lot of things you could say, is that fair? And they do it anyway.
Well, what I meant by that, Ray, was that is the perception. The only thing that counts are what voters are thinking.
Yeah.
And if the voters perceive it as being not fair, then they go in a different direction than if they consider it to be appropriate.
Which I bring up, I think we mentioned this yesterday, but again, this issue has not seemed to work in the past. It doesn't seem to bring any fresh meat to the equation. Voters have had the opportunity to weigh this in the past, and they have seemed to dismiss it. So I'm just curious as to the strategy of bringing up an issue that has been brought up again, of trying to resurrect something that hasn't worked in the past.
Well, if you're a bad pitcher and you only have one pitch, you keep on using it.
Got it.
Absolutely right. There's nothing here. They're not learning from their mistakes. They're not changing their playbook. This is so pat and so predictable. And it's going to end up hurting them in their credibility factor in the long run, especially for 2016. And I think people, you know, I think there's going to be some people who are anti-Obama, anti-Democrat, and they're going to be that way. Nothing you can say is going to change their minds. All right? And that's that. But the middle of the road people, you know, there are so many people who have been killed because of lack security across in other countries. And, you know, there were other bombings that have taken place. Lebanon, you know, the naval ship in Yemen. Nobody's bringing that up. They're bringing up just Benghazi because Hillary was Secretary of State. Right. They see it as a way to get to her. And there's nothing to get. She's been on Capitol Hill talking about this ad nauseum.
And that's right.
Just about 10 seconds, Alan. Go ahead.
A very good point, which is there have been lots of these things that happened in the Bush administration and the Reagan administration.
But they're not in power now. They're gone. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, well, but if you're critiquing, don't you have an obligation to do it in a way that people say, well, it's not just, it didn't start here.
All right, let's
go
back to the Spanish-American War, then. We'll just keep going.
Okay. We're out of time. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back, and then we have lots of time, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It is the 9th of May, and we always welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and I think we have one or two, Alan.
We do. Stephanie says, take the statement, because the Russians helped us in World War II and asked not that gives Putin to annex Crimea, but, quote, because Russia helped us in World War II, did that give Stalin the right to annex East Germany and East Berlin? Clearly, there's a Russian mentality of, quote, what's yours is mine, including going back to the Russian Revolution, where the taking of the sons of those who lived in the Ukraine, including trying to take my grandfather to fight into the Tsar's army at age 17, and the taking of the lands and property of the local citizenry is a common occurrence that seems to run through the genetic markings of its leaders. Trusting Russians to, quote, do the right thing is never a good idea, from Stephanie.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah, well, Tony checked in and said, the right wing has a lot to answer for by supporting McKinley and not thinking about Teddy Roosevelt. They allowed that trust buster's nose into the tent. It took until St. Ronald Reagan before we in the Chamber of Commerce can enrich our monopoly ways by agreeing not to compete, as when Apple, Google, etc. agreed not to raid each other's employees. Ha ha ha. Now, if we can get the GOP in the White House, our work would be done.
We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will get to them shortly. Let us talk about Snapchat for a moment. I found this to be an interesting story. This is, for those of you who are not perhaps aware that this app exists, there's an application for smartphones, and it's called Snapchat. And what it is that you take a picture of something, and then you send it to a friend, and then that picture, for want of a better term, exposes itself quickly, and the snap meaning you get to see it, and then it goes away.
Supposedly. Yeah.
Supposedly, right. So that's the way they've sold this. So it's basically like you give a quick picture, and then it goes away. And people use it for all sorts of purposes. Some are very...
Carlos Danger-esque?
I was going... Well, right.
Anthony Weiner.
Right. I was going to say some are very tame and funny and you know, cat and puppy pictures, cute things. And then, yes, there is the turn to a little more saucy, if you will.
Uh-huh.
So now, so here's the rule. And I love the first line of the Times article, which is what happens on the internet stays on the internet. The truth was laid bare on Thursday when Snapchat, the popular mobile messaging service, agreed to settle charges by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, that messages sent through the company's app did not disappear as easily as promised. Snapchat has built its service on a pitch that has always seemed almost too good to be true, that people can send any photo or video to friends and have it vanish without a trace. That promise has appealed to millions of people, particularly younger internet users seeking refuge from nosy parents, school administrators, and potential employers. But the commission charged that there were several easy ways to save messages from the service, and in settling the accusations, the company agreed not to misrepresent the disappearing nature of its messages.
Oh, this just goes back to what I've always said about the intranets, is you never post anything you don't want your mother to see, because it's going to be there forever. And I'm sure the people at Snapchat are kicking themselves for not taking the offer. I think Facebook or somebody else wanted to buy them for a lot of money at one point, and now they're in the toilet in terms of their worth because they can't keep up with their promises. And so we just had, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, oh, it looks good, it smells good in that internet kind of way, it's slick, it's fun. Let's do it, and I'm going to believe them. And, you know, I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you. You know, it's that kind of thing. People really need to be much more careful.
Well, as long as people have, and we've seen this over the past few days in the news, Twitter is a great example of this. You know, when celebrities post something stupid when they're drunk,
right.
And then they say, oh, they take it down. Well, yes, but by that time, half the world has already done a screenshot of it, and it's
too late,
and it's saved forever.
Right.
So. And the same thing is true for Snapchat. And I don't know, there's this obviously this privacy issue, but I don't think that seems to be the issue here. The issue seems to be the advertising aspect of it. You said that it would go away,
like,
and it doesn't.
It's the car dealer kind of thing.
You
have to you have to live up to your advertising promises, and they didn't. And so now the FTC, it's not the Communications Commission, it's the Trade Commission that's gone after them.
I think it's bigger than just images that don't disappear. Now, also in the complaint were things about collecting the user's location,
mm-hmm.
and address book contacts. And they compiled a list of 4.6 million usernames. It allowed the Find Friends feature, basically.
Right.
So basically what this says is you better read the privacy note. First of all, the companies better abide by their privacy regulations. And then the user better take a good look before agreeing.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's a long document.
And
you might want to take a look.
And it's a long legalese written document.
Yeah, you never know what it means.
They write it that way, so you don't really
know what it means.
Right, and there's too many commas.
Yeah.
In its complaint against Snapchat, the commission said that the app's messages, often called snaps, could be saved in several ways. Contrary to what the company has said, users can save a message by using a third-party app, the agency said, or employ simple workarounds that allow users to take a screenshot of messages without alerting another user. And that's the other issue, is that the person who is sending that does not know that you have saved it.
I think
forever.
Most, to be honest with you, I think most of the young people, and I say, you know, 20s or teens or whatever, who use that already know anything sent can be, a screenshot can be taken. I mean, it's fairly common knowledge. Even old people know that. Some.
Yeah, well,
I think
some people are gullible. I think that there are people who are gullible and they believe what they're told.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah. And they still want that. They like the idea of, again, I don't think this goes back to anything more nefarious than not wanting your parents to see it.
And that's the part of the issue here is that Facebook, their parents are using it.
And they don't
and
like
they
that.
Don't like it. And they want someplace where mommy and daddy aren't going to go.
Well, but if they're sexting, right? Because I don't know a lot about this stuff. But
go ahead, Mr. Danger.
But if they're sexting, then you really want those pictures to disappear, and you're counting on the fact that that'll happen. I like what you said, Libby, because it makes so much sense. You know, and so many of the experts who all of the media have been talking to about this have said the same thing. Hey, once it's on the internet, it's always on the internet. Now, I'm thinking about the politicians who are having their people use only BlackBerries. Ray, can you explain that to me as opposed to putting it onto the internet?
You mean as far... why they use BlackBerries in particular, but I know the president had a highfalutin one that they had to add special security to... And I'm not exactly sure why BlackBerry is...
BlackBerries have a higher level user system and operating system. I know when I looked to get a BlackBerry, and we're on Exchange server at my office, it would have been much more complicated for me to be able to sync a BlackBerry with a server than it is to do a smartphone or any of the other kinds of phones. So it's a much more
secure, right?
Secure, yeah, right. There's much more bigger firewall. And that's part of why they're using it. And thank God someone's using it, because BlackBerry is like writing its last chapter.
And this is amazing.
And this is apropos of absolutely nothing.
Although they are on the market on the fresh fruit stands right now. And
yes, they
delicious.
Are, and they're very
and they're
good.
Delicious. Fine. Yeah,
they're very little pits, but otherwise they're okay.
Yeah, little pits.
Okay.
All right. You had another comment?
No,
it's gone now. Isn't it?
Yeah.
The opportunity
is gone. Matter.
That happens.
Right. Yeah. We have devolved.
No, the kid who started this, the Snapchat, and had all the offers and everything, was born in 1990.
Yeah.
22
right.
years old.
Sure.
Yeah. Soon to be 23.
Kids
so,
today, yeah?
Yeah, there
well,
you go.
They'll be working at Dairy Queen soon enough.
God bless them.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable, WAMC.org.
Not that there's anything wrong with Dairy Queen, by the way, from our legal department.
Oh, no.
Dairy Queen's
Blizzard,
very nice.
Blizzard.
Oh, yeah. And the Brazier Burgers.
Yeah.
Oh, forget about it.
We'll be back after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Turning Stone Resort, offering spa, massage, and beauty treatment gift cards for Mother's Day, turningstone.com. Oblong Books, presenting Francine Prose with her book Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris, 1932. Saturday, May 10th, 7 p.m. in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com. And Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge. Spring Garden Benefit today and tomorrow, featuring over 1,000 plants for purchase and displayed by Habitat. Also hosting specialty food and craft vendors for the garden, home, and patio. BerkshireBotanical.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Ray Graff joining us this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You got anything, Alan?
Yes. As you know, our stimulating political discussions bring forth a lot of mail. Here's one. Good morning. Listening to the roundtable at 9:13 a.m., you played a beautiful piece of music in between stories. Instrumental guitar and soft drum. Who was that?
Great question.
Thanks for all you do from Casey.
Yeah, ask Mr.
Dave,
Hopper. Is the segment?
Dave Hopper will answer that question. He does a wonderful job of answering those emails, and we'll send you a reply.
But it was beautiful, and it was long. We played it for a long time.
Lovely. You got anything else?
No.
Okay.
I don't. Joe, do you?
No, although we got another letter from Teresa who said, what was the acoustical guitar song being played at 9:30 just before Joe said, welcome back to the roundtable. So
you know, we could save an awful lot of angst just by playing music for the hour.
That's right.
My point exactly. Goes to show.
Yeah, excellent. Well, makes us feel good. Okay, so let us go.
It just chills us out. That's all.
That's right.
It's a chilling effect.
All right, I have one more story, and if you're all good, I'll play a long song.
Oh, that would be great. MacArthur Park. We can start now.
New study on genes, G-E-N-E-S. Antibiotic-resistant genes are widespread in nature, according to a new study. Where is the study published, you ask? Ah, it is published in the journal Current Biology.
By the way, Joe, this is not new. We've known this for a long time. You know, what they're doing is they're dotting the I's and crossing the T's and showing us. But there's this whole breed of antibiotics which are failing now. They're not doing what they once did. Part of it is the fact that the beef and the chickens and the rest of it have been given antibiotics to make them, to make them easier to sell and market. But that adds up to this resistance, as well as other problems, which is just these are evolving bacteria, and many, many thousands of people are apparently dying from this. You go into a hospital and they really worry about some of these breeds of new bacteria. And it's something that should be of grave concern to everybody.
It seems to me, though, that the new here is the fact that the report is showing how widespread antibiotic resistant genes are in nature, meaning so mm-hmm. that raising questions of the prevalence of resistant genes. And while the environment is known to harbor antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria, as proven by many preceding studies, we did not really know the extent of their abundance, according to one of the study's authors and a researcher at the University of Lyon in France. And to try to determine the prevalence of antibiotic-resistant genes, scientists tapped into a growing reservoir of public data to compare DNA samples found in nature with those of superbugs that have infected patients in hospitals. Ultimately, researchers discovered antibiotic-resistant genes in 71 environments from human feces to English prairies.
I got the human feces part. The English prairies, can somebody explain
Home
that
on the
me?
Range,
sounds
I think.
Like a Garrison Keillor poem.
Right.
Human feces to the prairies.
Scientists have long known that antibiotic-resistant genes...
They're in nature.
Yeah. Most of the genes are benign with little potential for making the leap to animals and humans, but sometimes that transfer does happen, according to this. And what we're seeing more and more of that's unquestionably true is that these resistant genes are becoming more and more abundant in pathogens that can carry antibiotic resistance to new organisms.
So what's the end game? We're in
well,
trouble.
The end game is what gets us first: the global warming or the pathogens,
or any other million other things. So, do you want to spend a great deal of time worrying about this if you are not
yes.
a researcher?
No,
I know
well,
you do,
actually,
Alan. Everyone knows.
Actually,
it.
Of course, I do.
Yes.
Actually, if you're spending any time in a hospital or in a healthcare setting, you do need to worry about.
But if you're
this.
In the hospital, what are you going to do about it? You have to go to the hospital.
Yeah, but you know. Let me say this. As someone who has spent an inordinate amount of time in hospitals,
okay.
surgeries, different kinds of
okay.
things.
Bionics and such.
Yeah. Well, you know, a few blood clots here and there.
Yeah.
You go with the assumption that you're going to be healthier when you leave. And I can tell you that that is not the case. I've gotten sick after I've left. I always get bronchitis on a regular basis from my stays in hospitals because you've got MRSA, you've got all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff floating around in the hospital. It's not the healthiest place to be, but we have this perception that it should be a healthy place. So we do have to be concerned. I mean, you know, are we going to walk through life with a mask on our face and, you know,
Alan?
Oh, woe is me? But Ray, you got to be careful. We have to be concerned about this.
No, you're right, of course. And, you know, there are those, and without identifying any single individual, who are always willing to say there are 1,000 things that can get you out there, so we shouldn't pay attention. Let me put it this way. We're now living into our 80s as a species. When 40s was not unknown as the age of death in this country. So yeah, we find things that need to be done. Our scientists get busy and they do them.
All right, but a philosophical question for you
no,
is
no, no, but, But look, there are people who still smoke. I can't stop that from happening, but it happens. And,
I mean, it's not about, it's basically not sticking our heads in the sand and saying, oh, well, I'm going to die anyway, so what difference does it make, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But, I mean, if you're not a scientific researcher, what can be gained from staying up at night worrying about it? If you have to go to the hospital, you go to the hospital, you hope for the best. There are people, obviously, as quoted here in the article, who are worried about this. Well, you know, I got enough to worry about.
Well,
I got to pay my bills.
Well, but there's a political aspect to this, too. Think about this. The AIDS community, you know, very little was getting done. People became aware of it. All of a sudden, there were people going to the legislature, tying themselves to chairs, saying, we're not going to vote for you if you don't do if you don't find these answers. Now we have these cocktails which are prolonging life. So when people are aware, things happen. You know what I mean, Ray?
I dig it, man.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get our lockbox challenge update for the morning, and Megan Finnegan will join us.
What else? It's a mail like from David C. Hopper, our wonderful David, who says that was overt tier by Matthias Barjed. Thanks for listening.
Okay, let's.
That's the music.
Get Megan in here.
Yes, yeah. Sounds good. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, offering a selection of Mother's Day gifts such as perfumes, oils, lotions, candles, incense, music CDs, hair accessories, and gift cards on Facebook and sunflowernatural.com. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, currancompliance.com. And the Graduate School at SUNY New Paltz, graduate education in the Hudson Valley for 65 years, including master's degree programs in electrical engineering, accepting applications for summer and fall, newpaltz.edu/graduate.
Over tier song again. I like that.
Over tier.
What is the actual pronunciation?
It's a Norwegian, I believe. It's
a Nordic.
Nordic, right.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay.
Whatever. Just let's move on.
Okay.
It's a nice song.
So Megan Finnegan is here to tell us an update. And, you know, how many more days do we have left in this challenge, Megan?
We have 23 days left, Joe.
Wow, 23 Uh-oh. Days.
And we're going to lose $25,000.
Well, we have to get to $325,000 by the morning of the fund drive. Whoa. We are at $147,521. So
we can do it. We can do it.
$147,000.
Come on, team.
Oh, you're going to ask me to do math?
Yeah. the difference
between 325 and 147. Let's see. We've raised.
It's a little less than. Turn
what you need their mic on. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
That's okay.
It's okay. So I told everybody but Hopper that we were switching mics. It's
my fault. That's all right.
We've raised $22,000 since Monday, so we've got a ways to go.
It's really about how much you have to raise per day.
Hey, we could do it today.
Yeah.
We could do it today if everybody.
Okay. For Monday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead, Alan. What were you saying?
We could do it today if everybody was listening right now. Just everybody's listening right this second. Walk there. Put $5 in there. $10 in there. Whatever you can do, we'll make it because we're a team. We're a community. We're together. We invented WAMC together. We're keeping it alive together. That's what it's all about.
Now, as far as the challenge, $25,000 from Mr. Big, we need to get to the $325,000 point by June 2nd. $125 gets you?
The beautiful personalized WAMC mug.
Right, and I just want to go on the record as saying Lynn and I are going to do $125,000. And we're going to personalize the mug for our dog, probably, Bailey. But I'm hoping that everybody out there will join us. It's $125. Look what you get for $125 besides the mug.
Yeah, besides the mug.
Okay.
Great bumper music, certainly.
Right. Yeah. Well, you get a shorter fun drive, and that's a worthwhile thing.
Absolutely.
I don't want to hear anybody yelling about the fun drive being too long when I look them in the eye and it's, what the fuck? Really?
Yeah.
I said, oh, did you put something in the library?
Would you say that again, please? I didn't understand it the first time.
Yeah. Eloquent. Simple, but eloquent.
I'm sorry, again, in Nordic. welcome. Well, you're welcome to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org, WAMC.org to get into the lockbox. Megan will be back on Monday and tell us how we've done over the weekend, and we expect to have an explosive weekend in the lockbox, so we look forward to that. Thank all of you for being here this morning, and we will be safe, and we'll see you on Monday.
Okay.
Blackberries.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We'll be back after this short break.